the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
So again, that's Psalm 48, and it's on page 547. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise in the city of our God, his holy mountain. Beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth. Like the heights of Zaphon is Mount Zion, the city of the great king. God is in her citadels. He has shown himself to be her fortress. When the kings joined forces, when they advanced together, they saw her and were astounded. They fled in terror. Trembling seized them there, pain like that of a woman in labor. You destroyed them like ships of Tarshish, shattered by an east wind. As we have heard, so we have seen in the city of the Lord Almighty, in the city of our God. God makes her secure forever. Within your temple, O God, we meditate on your unfailing love. Like your name, O God, your praise reaches to the ends of the earth. Your right hand is filled with righteousness. Mount Zion rejoices. The villages of Judah are glad because of your judgments. Walk about Zion, go round her, count her towers, consider well her ramparts, view her citadels, that you may tell of them to the next generation. For this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide even until the end. Should we just pray before we start? Lord, thank you for your word and how you teach us for it. Please help us to have ears that are eager to listen to you and hearts that are open to you. Lord, please speak through me and help me to speak faithfully and clearly about you. Okay, well, good evening, everyone. If you don't know me, my name is James. I've been at Belmont for 2 years now with my now wife, Becky. Last year, I was working as a contact worker here, and this year, I've been working as a software developer. So today, we're going to be looking through Psalm 48, which is the second psalm that we're looking at in our short series of the Summer of Psalms. If you weren't here for the last psalm, don't worry, because in this series, we aren't looking at a general theme, but instead, we are taking each psalm and seeing what it has to say to us. If you've never looked at the Psalms, they make up the biggest book in the Bible, and they are written by a lot of various people. The Psalms are a collection of poems and songs, and they are meant for reflection, but can also offer a lot of wisdom. So as we look at Psalm 48, we will see that it is the Psalm of Triumph, where God protects the Israelites from their enemies. And it's also a Psalm of Joy over God's provision and protection over their city. A triumph where we see an unsuccessful attack on God's people. So Psalm 48 might not be well known to many of you, but it comes under what is called the Songs of Zion, where they think about God's city and God. So Zion, which the psalm is focused on, is known as God's city. Physically, it's known as the hill of Jerusalem, on which the city of David was built. David was the most famous king of Israel and God's people, and in his time, him and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites and took the stronghold of Zion. And Zion was then known as the city of God. From there, David brings in the Ark of the Covenant, and Zion becomes the center of worship and the place of God's presence and dwelling. However, in the New Testament, Zion refers to God's heavenly kingdom, the New Jerusalem, and as it says in Galatians 4, verse 26, the Jerusalem above. The Bible also shows Zion as his church and his people. In the passage, it says that it is the joy of the whole earth. And we can see Zion and our church as a beacon of light that shines out across the whole earth, starting at the church and spreading out. It is God's city that he loves, and that love spreads out into the world, shining out from his church. So in this psalm, we're going to see a God that provides for his people, and the challenge for us is to think about how we react to the way that God provides for us. Looking at this psalm, I hope we can see the story of what's happened to the people in the city of Zion, living in a city under the threat of attack. And I hope we can see how God provides for them and how they react to God's provision. And so with this in mind, as we look through this passage, I want us to think about four different things to do with the passage and about God's provision for his people. So those four points that we're going to think about are God and his refuge, God and his unfailing love, God and his guidance, and God and his people. Okay, so let's go on to our first point where we're going to think about God and his refuge. So in the first three verses we read, God is the Lord and most worthy of praise in the city of our God, his holy mountain. Beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth. Like the heights of Zaphon is Mount Zion, the city of the great king. God is in her citadels. He has shown himself to be her fortress. So the psalm starts, as I said before, by the writer telling us about the city of Zion, and they express how much they adore the city. In verse 2, it says that it is beautiful in its loftiness, meaning it stands beautifully and majestically high above everything. And in verse 2, it's compared to the heights of Zaphon, a mountain that was high above anything else in the region, and a place where the other tribes thought the gods lived, or their gods lived. In verse 3, we see how it says it is the joy of the earth. So they're saying that Zion is the place to be, and that in Zion they are happy and joyous, and that they adore their city. But actually, in reality, physically and geographically, their city wasn't necessarily that great. Well, at least it wasn't the greatest city in the world. It wasn't on the loftiest mountain in the world, and Jerusalem wasn't of great significance in the region. And it wasn't necessarily the most secure city. However, what did make the city great was God and God's presence in the city. In verses 1 and 2, we see that God is in the city. And in verse 3, sorry, that's wrong. In verses 1 and 2, we see that it is God's city. And in verse 3, it says that God is in her citadels. So the king resides in Zion. And because of that, we see in verse 3, God has made Zion a fortress. So God has made Zion a fortress, and because of him and his presence, and God therefore is their refuge. We see that God is a God that gives us refuge. He gives us safety and rest in him. And in his presence, the people in Zion felt safe. And it was a fortress where they felt safe. God's people found refuge in God. And we can see that the place of refuge has always been with God. We see this in Eden, where God is with them, in Zion, where God dwells in his temple, in us, the church, as God dwells in us, and in heaven, where God sits on his throne. God dwells in us if we are believers of Christ, and we can find refuge in him. As it says in Psalm 46, God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea. Now, we all take refuge in something when we are in need of safety or a place to hide. When I was doing my GCSEs, I found it really hard. It was the first real pressure I had to achieve something, and I was scared of doing badly. I was scared of letting down my parents, letting down me, and losing my future prospects. So I found it pretty scary and, yeah, stressful. But in my breaks, I would watch the series Lost. I got a bit addicted to the show, and if you've never watched it, it's a really weird show where people get stuck on an island and loads of random stuff happens. But the point is that I found a lot of comfort in just being able to sit there on the sofa, not think about anything related to maths, and just immerse myself in this weird series and world. The TV show became my place of comfort, hiding, and security. It was my refuge. And that's the thing, we all take refuge in something. It could be food, could be TV, or it could just be a hot water bottle. But actually, what God is saying to us is that he is a refuge, just like the city of Zion was for their people, for his people. And we should use him as a refuge, not relying on earthly comfort, which is not strong and reliable like God is for his people. And what could be a better refuge than the creator of the universe, the one that is in control of everything? So are we using him as our place to go in fear and worry? Or are we focusing on earthly things? We may have things that we struggle with in life. It could be stress, it could be fear of the future and the unknown, it could be overwhelming pressures in life, it could be illness that brings fear. Life is hard and it isn't easy, But God says we can come to him and come to him as a safe place where we can rest in him and trust in his security. So do we use God as our refuge and see him as our refuge? Do we rely on ourselves and earthly things when things get scary to try and give us security? Do we put our full trust in God as our refuge, our rock, and our strength? Okay, so we've looked at verses 1 to 3 quite a bit, so let's go on to our second point and think about God and his unfailing love. So I'm not going to focus too much on verses 4 to 7, but let's have a look through it and kind of see what it's saying. So in verses 4 to 7, we see why the people in Zion see God as their refuge and fortress. We see what God has done for them that makes them so thankful to their God and why they trust in him. We see that God has delivered them from their enemies and the things that can cause them harm and death. In verse 4, we see that all the kings from the different nations have come together to attack Zion. And I'm guessing that must have been pretty scary for Zion to just have all these people coming to attack them. But as we see, God deals with it. In verses 5 to 6, it says, "They saw her and were astounded. They fled in terror and trembling seized them there." So they've seen Zion and they are terrified of God's city. In verse 6, it compares the fright they are in upon seeing Jerusalem to the unsettling pains of a woman in labor, which are sharp, grievous, and sudden. And in verse 7, we see that God destroys them like the ships of Tarshish shattered by an east wind. Ships of Tarshish being big, strong, reliable ships that traveled far. So God shows his strength against strong enemies. God in these verses has protected his city and people from their enemies and given them deliverance from danger and death. And because of that, they recognize God's love and mercy for his people. They recognize God's deliverance. Okay, so let's read verses 8 to 11. "As we have heard, so we have seen in the city of the Lord Almighty. In the city of God, God makes her secure forever. Within your temple, O God, we meditate on your unfailing love. Like the name, O God, your praise reaches to the ends of the earth. Your right hand is filled with righteousness. Mount Zion rejoices. The villages of Judah are glad because of your judgments." So in verse 8, we see the psalmist say, "As we have heard, so we have seen in the city of our God. God makes her secure." So they have seen what God has done and how God has made them secure. And then in verse 11, it says how they are glad and rejoice because of what God has done. Then in verse 9, we read how they meditate on God's unfailing love. So their focus is on the love that God has shown them, and they acknowledge how God has shown them mercy and kindness through his saving actions. As we see, God delivers his people because he loves his people. It's not because of anything they have done, it's just because of his unfailing love for them. And from that, the people in Zion are thankful to God, and they focus on what God has done out of his love for them. In verse 10, we see that God's praise reaches the ends of the earth, and his right hand is filled with righteousness. So from their thankfulness of God's love, we see God's praise reaches the ends of the earth. So because of their thankfulness, God is known and praised to the ends of the earth. So clearly these people are enthusiastic about God's love and deliverance. And why wouldn't they be? God has done something amazing for them. So I don't know if you've ever seen the second Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire. But there's one part where Spider-Man heroically saves a train full of people. It's in a part where the train is falling down to the ground from a railway bridge. But I want us to think about if we were one of those people in the train and your life has just been saved. How would you react? Would you just carry on with your day as if nothing has happened? Maybe do some washing, maybe eat a sandwich? What if someone asked you how your day was? Would you just say, "Yes, fine, nothing much happened"? I think most of us would firstly thank the hero that had saved us. And secondly, I think they would tell someone. Tell them the news, tell anyone that you see, because something amazing has happened. Your life has just been saved. But in the same way Jesus has saved us, so why wouldn't we act in the same way as someone who has been saved from death? And why wouldn't we act in the same way the Israelites did? Why would we live our lives as though nothing has happened? God's love should have an impact on our lives. Jesus has saved us from death and sin when he died on the cross. He has done something amazing for us. God has sent his son to give us eternal life. And that's huge, and it's life-changing, but we might not always see it like that, or we might forget how much love God has shown us. As Charles Spurgeon says, so long as we are receivers of mercy, we must be givers of thanks. Our God is a God who is worthy to be praised. He's a God whose love we should take seriously. So do we see Jesus' death, as an amazing show of God's unfailing love to his people and to us? He is a God who has given us eternal life. This passage challenges us to praise God in the same way the people in Jerusalem did. They focused on God's loving kindness and mercy. God's love should be something that we keep coming back to, something we don't just take for granted. It should be something we focus on in our everyday lives. They gave praise to God for how he saved him, and this praise reached the ends of the earth. God is a God who should be praised, and our praise should be shared. So we should tell people about it and be excited by it. Our praise should reach the ends of the earth. So do we view this as life-changing and something that we value? Is it something we focus on and keep coming back to? And is it important enough that we want to share it to the ends of the earth? Okay, so let's now go on to our third point, where we're going to think about God and his guidance. So in verses 12 to 14, we read, walk about Zion, go around her, count her towers, consider well her ramparts, view her citadels, that you may tell them to the next generation. For this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide to the end. So in verse 13, we see the psalmist tell the people to go around and look at their city and the city's defences. Some commentaries say that this is the same as in Nehemiah 12, where they basically have a festival and celebrate after victory. They look around their city walls to see no damage and they sing praise to God. The walls of God's city are untouched. They look at God's protection of his city. Again, we see thankfulness to God for him delivering his people and a call to remember what God has done so that they can tell the next generations. And then in the last verse, verse 14, we see the psalmist tell us that because of this, God is our God forever and he will be our guide to the end. They see God's love for his people in his protection and they trust him to be the one to guide them even until the end. Isn't it great? Even until the end, God can always be our guide in this life and into the next. God will guide us and guide us like a shepherd guides his sheep. And God is our guide to his new creation and to the heavenly Jerusalem. If we follow God as our guide, our future will be joy in his presence with him in his city. Through Zion in this passage, we are given a foretaste of the future hope we have if we are trusting in God. And we are given a picture of the heaven to come. God's new creation, God's city, where God's presence is and where the joy of the earth is. And for us, the reality is that this is the future hope for us as Christians. We see a heavenly city of God's people in his presence, in the fortress of God, and this is our future. He is the one to guide us to this city and guide us to the gates of Zion. It is only through God as our guide we will get to his glorious new creation. So one year on holiday in Cyprus with my family, my brother's father-in-law suggested to us to go on an off-road trip with this man. I'll explain it. Makes sense. So he told us that it'd be amazing and that the man would look after us. He did know the man. But after 3 hours and quite a bumpy, uncomfortable journey, we started thinking, was the trip really worth it? My mum was having like a mini heat stroke and it all started to be quite rubbish really, wasn't going very well. But at the end of the trip, we saw something that made it worth it. The man took us out of the car and led us down these rocks to this hidden cove that opened up into a beach. We all gasped with how amazing the cove was. The light shimmered onto the rocks, and the sound echoed the crashing waves. We had an amazing view of the sea. This isn't actually it, by the way, but it's close. Point being is that we had to follow this man for a long time. The journey was long, and sometimes we doubted the man. But in the end, he guided us to something amazing. And this is the same with God. God can be our guide in our lives. We can follow him until the end, and he will guide us to his new creation with him. But we have to keep following him. The challenge for us is to let God be the guide through our life and to keep following him. We might think, well, of course we would do that. Why wouldn't we? But we must be careful not to stray from God and to keep following him. Like it says in Isaiah 53, verse 6, we all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned his own way. So all of us can stray from God. What's funny is that the Israelites stopped following God in 2 Chronicles 36. We read of the same people in Jerusalem and how they ignored God's messengers and despised God's words. They stopped going to God as their saviour and they were dismayed. At first they were so thankful to God for what he had done, but they clearly forgot about that and stopped following God. And we can do the same. God has saved us through Jesus and has given us future hope in him. So the challenge for us is to continue to let him be our guide and our God until the end. Will we finish well and be following God till the day we leave this earth and follow him to his new creation? As we have heard, so we have seen. Our God has shown us his love on the cross, and because of that, we can trust him to be our guide until the end. Okay, so let's lastly think about God and his people. So throughout this passage, we have thought a lot about the things that God does for us in a very personal way. But actually, when we look at this psalm, it is also about a community of people under God's rule. The passage looks to God's church and shows us a picture of that church. And so quickly, I want us to think about what we've already thought about, but in the perspective of God's people and God's church. So in verses 1 to 3, we focused how God was in their city, and because of that, it was a refuge and the joy of the earth. In the same way, our church should have the presence of the Lord in it. And because of that presence, our church should be the joy of the earth and a refuge to all of us and the people that come to our church. It should be a place of welcome from the fears of the world and a place filled with safety in God and God's love. In verses 4 to 11, we read about a God that shows us unfailing love by delivering us from death through Jesus. And because of that, we should be giving our God the praise that he deserves and be focused on that love and keep coming back to God's love. Our church should be a church that is always focused on the love of God because of what he has done for us. And lastly, in verses 12 to 14, we saw that God is our guide from this life into the next. And for us as a church, our guidance should always be from him. Any issues we have as a church or any difficulties we have should always be taken to God and looked at from what he has to say. So as we can see, this passage talks to us in a personal way and a corporate way, or talks to us personally and corporately, as a people of God and as God's church, as it was in Zion and as it will be in his heavenly kingdom. So before we finish, let's just think about what we thought about. We see from this passage a God and his people in his city. We see a God who provides for his people. We see a God that provides for our every need personally and corporately. He gives us refuge, he shows us love and deliverance, and he guides us even until the end. So will we accept the provision that God provides for us? Is he the one that we seek as a refuge, or do we go elsewhere? Are we praising God for the love and deliverance he gives us? And will we continue to look to God as our guide and shepherd, even until the end when he takes us to his city?